Hello, and welcome to the second episode of AD Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I'm your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend, David.
Live from Austin, Texas.
And joining us this week, we have our first guest, a frequent player at Evo, and the man who can kick all our asses at BlazBlue, Lorenzo.
Oh, you know who it is. Yeah, this is Lorenzo here. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah,
of course, of course. I wanted to begin, so last time we said a little bit about how we got into video games. How about you? How did you get into esports and what fighting games in general?
Oh, I could spend all day about all the different experiences and things that got me to where I am now. I'll try to keep it condensed and everything because it all really comes down to the passion of competitive gaming. You see a lot of normal sports like football, basketball, even more solitary kind of ones that you can just do yourself like golf and everything kind of be more up there on the public eye and the public spectrum. And once I actually was playing fighting games growing up, I'd always just play against myself and the computer. And when I finally went to college and realized that those same people who kind of grew up the same way as me would meet up in a room, put down some money, run a bracket, and see who can get first place, that's what really opened my eyes to all the possibilities of the fact that you can treat competitive gaming as a traditional sport. So
yeah,
it all really started around the same time David and I went to the same college. We went up to NAU. Mm-hmm. Played a lot of fighting games with people around the campus. Still playing nowadays, even though the technology's kind of surpassed some of my capabilities. It's still a really big spectacle and just something to be enjoyable for. And yeah, when it comes to gaming overall, because I started the fighting game stuff alone, that's kind of the same thing that I take with on single player experiences too, is I like to find the depth and the enjoyment of sitting down with the controller, the TV glow, and just absorbing yourself into the world and being able to have that experience with you after you hit that game over screen. And that's the kind of player that I am. I want to be there in the moment, whether it's with a lot of people or whether it's something you have to do by yourself and share with others how you experienced it. And that's pretty much the intro to me. Love playing video games with people, by myself, and anything in between.
Sure. Oh, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I have always wanted to be a competitive video game player. But the fighting games especially, it requires that like frame watching or countering and like that twitch movement. I've never been able to devote either the time or practice needed to get to that kind of level. And that's why I think I've fallen in love with Hearthstone, is it doesn't require that twitch movement, but it gives me that same sort of strategy where I can build out my deck, I can learn all of the different cards, I can learn the meta, and I can be that really competitive video game player, but in a situation where it doesn't require me to have that, like, frame by frame, know when to cancel a move to block or something like that.
Oh, definitely. You actually bring up a good point with the Hearthstone. Sorry to cut you off there, David, because there's even more depth to it. There's even like little reactions in the mind game that you play when you know you're playing against a certain deck. If you have your game plan
out,
exactly. So there's a lot of fundamentals that you can take from other gaming experiences and contribute them to the fighting game stuff. And you're right, after a while there is a barrier of entry for just being able to do to certain things at a certain time when it's needed, and that can either turn on or turn off certain players.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I have gotten interested in competitive games, but I think part of my problem with that scene is that I really like to play a game and then feel like I've mastered it and then move on to something else. So obviously I haven't like mastered anything, any competitive scene, but it gets to the point where I'm like, all right, I figured out how to do this combo and I pulled it off a couple of times. I figured out at least the basics of how this game works. I'm ready to learn something else.
Well, fighting games, you can learn all of the different characters if you wanted to go that route. But yeah, I love video games for the story or the mechanics, and I totally agree where once I've experienced that to that like 95%, and all that's the last 5% is it's like collecting every little thing that doesn't even matter. At that point, I want to move on and get something where it's all new again. But yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like last year, I think Splatoon was one of the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, not quite competitive, but one of the like online games that I've played the longest. And it was probably because every couple of weeks they released a new weapon, so... I guess there's a ceiling where it's like you're getting better and you're getting better, and then you just like it doesn't feel like you're improving a lot, but you have to put in the hard work to get a noticeable improvement. And then I'm just at that point I don't want to put in the work, and I'm like I'll switch over to something else where I'll start off really bad and get up to pretty good quickly. And so, like Splatoon, every time they introduced a new weapon, I'd start playing again because I could learn how to use it. And I'd get up to a certain level of skill and then go, I'm bored.
So I think the lesson that the fighting games can learn from Splatoon is to stay fresh.
I think that same idea is what ultimately scared me away from Overwatch. Even though I loved the beta and I love the design of it, but I just know going in that I will love it for a month and then I will be terrible because everyone else will feel better than me and I don't have the time to devote.
Yeah, I actually thought I would be into... I did want to go back to Overwatch now because there is new stuff. I thought I would be... into it for longer than I was. I think it was about a month, and on reflection, I think that's because it didn't have those regular content drops like Splatoon did. It just took a really long time, and they released one new character, and now there's another long gap and a bunch of hype and puzzles and ARGs for Sombra, but there's really only been one like major new gameplay mechanic introduced since it came out.
And ranking. That's what I keep hearing about is the ranking mode, but...
Oh, yes.
I think this is as good a time as any to move on, and first, we need to apologize that there's been a change in plans. Last episode, I said that we would be playing through Zelda Skyward Sword. That didn't happen, because at the time we didn't realize that that was a 40-hour game, and we didn't have that much time to devote to a single game. So we switched gears.
A bit of a busy month, at least for me.
Yes, it was also short between the two episodes. The October will be better, but... So we switched gears and played a game that David had somehow missed, God of War. The classic PS2 game that came out in 2005. Let's talk about that. How did you miss this classic game, David?
I don't know. I didn't realize until I started playing it again and got into it, but at least one of the people I hung out with at NAU played it, because I remembered seeing a lot of the different parts. I think it must have been someone at the Dirty Verdy, which was where a whole group of friends lived and hung out. But anyway, I don't know. I think it just I saw it and didn't think it was my thing, or I just never got around to it.
What about you, Lorenzo?
I actually got introduced to this game through my brother's at the time girlfriend, but now currently wife of. I want to say more than 5 or 6 years of marriage. What ended up happening is that growing up, My parents were never super strict about the video games, but they would keep an eye out in case they saw a little too much blood, gore, or boobs or anything. God of War has all three,
All of
so
that. Yeah.
yep. So we were never really the kind of rebellious gamers that just because you hear it from one or two people doesn't mean that you have to go out and play it and experience it. But apparently, my brother and at the time his girlfriend were hanging out. God of War was right there. I heard about it through a couple of my schoolmates. Then she was kind enough to let us borrow it for a bit, and we both played it, and we both got really violent after playing it. And it was around the same time that it came out too, so it still felt pretty fresh, and kind of made me surprised that David missed out on it until into his college time. So that's pretty much how I got into it. I jumped onto it around the same time frame that it was released.
Yeah, I think
I
it was probably because my around the time it was released, yeah, my mom was also very well, not super strict, but anytime I bought a new game, she would sit down and she would watch me play it for at least 15, 20 minutes, and she asked me, does this have sex in it? Does it have like a whole lot of gratuitous violence? And I was a good kid. I answered honestly, but I'm pretty sure any 10 seconds of God of War and she would have said no.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so then by the time I saw it again, later in college, a few years after that, it was like it had kind of passed, and it was an older game.
I had played it near the end of my high school, probably 2006. By then, though, I had moved the PlayStation 2 into my room. So I could have been playing anything, and my parents wouldn't have really cared, or at least known about it. And I really enjoyed the game, and when the PlayStation 3 collection came out, immediately bought that, replayed it then, and then it's been like another 5 or 6 years since then. So it's a game that I've played about once every 5 years, and I've loved it every time. So, really good game, and it holds. Did you play the PS3 collection or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually still have
How about
the
you,
greatest
Seth?
hit version on the PlayStation 2, so I have a backwards compatible PS3 that still plays the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 1 discs. So I got to play it with a little bit of my rose-tinted glasses of the nostalgia, having the screen tear here and there because of the PS2 emulation through the PS3, and it all just felt like a pretty good throwback situation, even though I know that the collector's editions kind of cleaned everything up and made it look fresh. I feel like it still, I agree, it still holds up today, even on the
It really
old
does.
software.
And so let's go ahead and get into what we liked about God of War. For myself, the one thing that above everything else just nailed it home of why I think this game succeeded is the puzzles. You see the cover, you see the advertisements for it, you hear the popular talk, and it's all about the violence, the boobs. But when you actually play it, there are puzzles perfectly paced throughout the gameplay to give you those breaks. But even better than that is that each puzzle is unique, and each puzzle is left unexplained and hard enough where you will get stuck. You will have to sit and think about it for at least a little bit, get your mind moving until you get past that puzzle, and then you're back into the action. And I think that pacing right there is what turned this game from just a good into a great.
I
How about
agree.
you?
I agree. The thing about the, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. The advertisements and everything make it seem like it's a big muscular manny kind of game that only manly men will manly maliciously murder your way through all of your situations, and then boom, you've got these puzzles that you have to remember. The brain is a muscle too, so you have to really work it out. You have to sit down and think, and the way that it contrasts with the actual combat makes it for a very engaging experience, even when your thumbs get tired from doing certain combos. Now you've got a block puzzle or something to mix things up. It did it really well. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that goes into one of the things that I was going to say that I really liked, which is kind of in the same vein, was the level design, including the puzzles, was really good. I thought it just kind of struck me as I was running around, especially in the first area around Athens, that you're doing a lot of like running down a path, and then you end up circling around to the same area and going down another path, and that kind of gives it depth and makes it feel like it's not really, you're not just like running down a hallway and with a fight every 5 feet. And I think that
yeah,
that was
it gives
the thing
a sense of place again. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in Athens, where they actually made it look and feel like a residential area. You know, you had this plaza, and you're going in and out of the buildings around the plaza. Of course, then later when you get to the temple, it's more like, or the, you know, Temple of Pandora, it's more like, oh, well, this is built specifically to challenge intruders, so it's all going to be BS anyway. But
yeah.
So that, I think that the puzzles and the level design were what made me realize, oh, I think when it first came out, I saw all the commercials and I was just like, okay, this is just going to be blood and gore and sex, and there's not going to be any depth to it because it's just selling itself on the blood and gore and sex. But in the gameplay, there is a lot of depth.
Yeah. I can't help but compare it to something like Call of Duty, where you can go through entire levels and all you have to do is press forward. You don't actually have to partake in the combat itself. But, and that's all the Call of Duty games really have going for them is the combat. So
right.
To see this God of War game where I am sure there are puzzles that completely blocked certain people. I know there's the one where you have to move a block and there's a timer, and if you don't get it in time, the spikes go up. Like, that killed me so many times, and I had to leave and do another part of the game and come back because you have to complete each puzzle eventually. But I had to come back to it later because, and then with that, like, calm down, okay, think it through. When's the earliest I can jump onto this block to then jump to the place I need to get to, and just time that out. And, like, it just fantastic that they had the I'm blanking on the word, but just the gall to actually like go for that level of difficulty with their puzzles and not just have something where it'll just provide the answer after a couple of failures.
And that actually brings up one of the other follow-up things. The reason why I got my hands on God of War was because one of the puzzles and one of the little action events actually made my brother mad and his now wife mad. So to the point where I took care of that after watching for a little bit and understanding.
Awesome.
So you kind of see it from a different angle. Yeah, you're right. Sometimes you need to take a break, rethink things in a different way, or like just work on some of your reactions in terms of the dodging or the blocking mechanics, and just come at it with a fresh mind or fresh body. And having me watching everything kind of from an outsider's perspective kind of made things a little simple for me. But once I eventually kept playing, I personally got stuck on a few of the little challenge quests, the little areas where the enemies just kind of felt like they kept swarming up on me. And that's where my brother and his girlfriend took over from there. It was that kind of depth that I think the word, like you said, the gall, the confidence to put these sort of layers
confidence,
into the level design.
Yes.
Yeah, into the level design and into the puzzles that just made it a bigger package than what it seemed, and a pleasant bigger package at that. One of the other points I wanted to bring up too, of one of the things I did like about it, were the power-ups. Jumping off from the combat, it never really felt stale in any way for me. The power-ups and the way that it was distributing the orbs to upgrade and level up your magic abilities or your Blades of Chaos, everything felt like there was a natural progression for when you mm-hmm. began on the ship, and now you're at the temple and you're a little bit better, and everything just felt like you were going a couple steps, you were evolving as the game was progressing, without it ever feeling a bit overwhelming. I found myself using pretty much every tool that I had, maybe less of the Medusa heads as the game kept going on and the enemies just kept feeling a little harder to manage. But I never really felt like they threw too much at me, like a couple other games I want to mention, like Devil May Cry or Bayonetta. They have great mechanics and they feel good nowadays, but looking back at God of War, coming back to it in a fresh way like we are now, I really did feel like they paced the progression of the power-ups as well as the enemies too, to the point where I felt a little frustrated, but a fair kind of frustration when, okay, you're fighting against the Minotaurs and the Cyclops again, but they kind of leveled up. They got a little stronger. They're using different tactics and different weapons in the later later stages. And it felt like, you know, you play a beat-em-up, like an old-school beat-em-up kind of game, like Streets of Rage or a Final Fight, and you're going left to right, eating those random chickens and things out of the trash cans, the random little pizzas from the TMNT beat-em-ups, and you're still fighting the same Foot Clan dudes. You're still fighting the same ones. It just kind of gets you thinking outside the box, thinking, if these guys have started a rampage since stage one, why haven't they buffed up the armor by stage 5? They just increased the number of guys that are jumping at you, or maybe show one or two special guys. The God of War kind of challenged that in the sense that, okay, the regular foot soldier dudes that were attacking the ship just had, like, a sword, and they were just pretty much in their little undies just trying to swarm you. And then later on, they actually have some armor, and they have better swords, and they're quicker with their attacks, because you've naturally, as a player, have gotten better, and as a character, Kratos has gotten stronger. That was one of the things that I really enjoyed with the game. It made the whole experience feel very fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even the foot soldiers, the ones that are in their underwear, as you said, eventually they get shields. Mm-hmm. And then you have to work to break those shields before you can just take them out normally. And I did really enjoy the fact that it was like as you were getting closer and closer to your prize, they got harder and harder. And then for that last chapter, it reverts back to that original enemies that were in Athens, and you're just able to clear them out like they were nothing.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it gave you that power trip moment.
That was a really cool feeling.
Yeah.
So I think we've covered everything as far as the light. I mean, there's of course stuff like the music is pretty fantastic. Anything else you want to mention as the likes before we go to the dislikes?
I just think it's kind of funny that it was basically Greek mythology fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, just the way the story... I mean, the story beats were also really well written. The whole, like, you're going, you think you're about to get your prize after all of this, and then, you know, it all goes wrong, and then you have to climb your way back. But just on a general level, I think it's just kind of funny that they said, okay, here's all of these figures in Greek mythology, but our original character is the best and the strongest, and he's going to take down one of the gods and become the god, and everybody else needs his help, and that's why
they can't intervene directly.
Right. It's just, yeah, for some reason this... You know, my original character is the only one that can help all of these Greek mythological figures that are supposed to be more powerful. So he's the Mary Sue of Greek mythology, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing that stood out for me was more of a personal note. That, like you said, the music and the overall effect of everything felt like a big Greek fan fiction, kind of a big impromptu kind of thing of the more modern age. And it kind of hit home for me, too, because growing up, there was a television sitcom called Living Single that had a really catchy, soulful kind of intro. They are living single. And it's one of those shows that, because I was a kid, my parents would love watching, and I had no control of the TV, so I might as well watch, too. And one of the actors in that was Terrence C. Carson. He plays a brother that's kind of sophisticated and suave and very cool in a little jazzy kind of way. And every now and then when he gets angry, he doesn't go like, "Rah, I'm angry," like Kratos does. He just goes, "You simpleton, I cannot believe you would do this." And it's like, I see the guy and I hear the voice and I'm thinking, oh man, he's pulling off this role really well as I, you know, reflect on it older. But fast forward to this game being released, I'm hearing Kratos. I'm hearing the other voice actors, like for Athena and for Ares. And I'm hearing them say their lines with such a robust kind of Greek pantheon kind of actings. And you just hear Kratos, "I will slay you," with like the really, really rambunctious kind of loud, I'm trying to find other adjectives, bombastic kind of bellowings and everything. And that's the same guy who was suave and smooth in the little sitcom thing that I saw growing up. So I felt like more attached when I realized that the actual actor that I saw so many episodes of him acting all smooth, calm, and cool is now tearing out Cyclops eyeballs and doing a lot of things. You don't see him the same again when you see him in real life, but it just amplifies the whole experience when you find something from your childhood in a more modern era, similar to how we all grew up learning about Greek mythology, and now all you can recognize, like the Minotaur or the Hydra and things when we were reading up about them in the books, and now you see them in the gameplay. Mm-hmm. That was just one of those personal moments for me when you hear the voice actor that they chose for Kratos. Just definitely felt more personal for me.
Cool. Yeah, that's the only... God of War is the only thing where I've ever heard Terrence Carson from, so that's my only experience, at least to my knowledge. I'd have to look him up on IMDb, I guess, to find out more.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about the whole fan fiction thing, I could not find the interview, but I found a related one that one of their plans when planning out God of War 2 and 3 was that mm-hmm. Kratos would then go on to fight all of the other pantheons of gods. And I always thought that was a really, like, cool idea, that they would create this Mary Sue character. He would kill his own gods. And what would he do after that? He would kill all the other gods as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yes. If there's one thing I knew about the plot, which I knew before playing it, just the overall series plot, it's that Kratos feels really bad about having murdered his family, and the
yes.
only solution
he
knows,
so bad.
The only solution he can see before him is to keep murdering people until he stops feeling bad, and just work his way up the chain.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he asks the gods to forgive him for this transgression of his. And they say, "Yes, we will forgive you if you kill all of these other people that are in our way, or this god that's in our way." And, of course, what happens to him in the end? "Oh, we forgive you, but, you know, that doesn't mean you can forgive yourself."
Right. That was great. It's just like, two or three times through the game, he goes to Athena and he says, "Athena, if I do this, will you make me forget these horrible visions and stop the nightmares?" And Athena says, "The gods will forgive you." And then he asks again, and she says, "The gods will forgive you." And then at the end, he says, "Okay, so you're going to stop the nightmares, right?" And she goes, "Well, I never said that."
That was really well done. And I also really liked the fact that, showing that the world is sort of whole and open, is that in the beginning, right before you leave Athens, you can actually visit the bluffs, where from the very opening cutscene, you see him jump from, and you can visit that in the middle of the game. And really well done. But let's move into the things we did not like about God of War. And the top amongst that for myself was the quick time events, and especially the whole final boss battle. That was the era of video games where they just did not know. They still kind of don't know how to, but just that exemplified bad final boss design, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When the final boss is suddenly something totally different from the rest of the game that you've been playing.
Not even that. The fact that your weapon for fighting the final boss is completely different from the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that so frustrated me.
It just set up some sort of bigger spectacle that you expected. Going back to the themes of like evolution and getting stronger throughout the whole game, then you get thrown to this boss battle against Ares, and the way that it was structured, the way that his attacks are, the way that everything kind of happened once you opened Pandora's box and just became Godzilla mode for a little bit, it kind of took all that
tact. Yeah, you became the 50-foot tall man.
yeah. All that tact and all that battle like kind of experience that you learned doesn't necessarily get thrown out the window. It just kind of gets ignored for a bit, and it just becomes a slugfest.
Yeah. And I died multiple times on the endless, it felt like endless waves of Kratos. It was probably some like crazy number, like 100 of them that you had to kill. But like I thought maybe you had to die. Like there's no other explanation for why they would throw so many at you for so long, other than like maybe there's a point to this. But no, it's just kill a whole lot of waves of people for no reason.
Yeah, although I will say they did. They kind of subverted their, you know, their own kind of running theme there. You have, you know, throughout the game, you have all of these quick time events and like special context buttons to, you know, kick people off of cliffs or tear somebody's head off. And then at the end of the game, you get press circle to hug your family.
That's true. And you transfer your health in. So, like, one of the things that I remember I tried was I hugged my family until I died, thinking, oh, I just want to give all of my life to them. But that didn't work. Because every other time in the game when you run into a endless sort of wave mechanic, it's usually because there's a puzzle related to it.
Exactly.
Like, there's a button that you need to freeze that enemy on top of, and that's why it keeps respawning, or there's a doorway you need to block. So when I get into this endless wave of Kratos, I go, oh, hey, this must be a puzzle, but it isn't. And that really annoyed me. What about you guys? Do you have any moments or aspects to the game that just got under your skin?
Yeah, there were a few points. So like I said, I really liked the level design and the complexity, but there were also some points where I just got lost and was like, especially where there were two paths and, you know, a lot of games have this problem as well. There's two paths and you go, okay, one of these is the main path and the other leads to some kind of secret. So I'm going to go 50 feet down one, and if I don't see a secret, I'm going to go back to the other and I'm going to, you know, run down there because it's probably going to be a short path if it goes to a secret. and, you know, kind of getting lost, or there were a few places where you'd actually, like, loop around and you end up standing on a balcony, and the only place to go on the balcony is to jump down to the place you were before, and it's like, okay, I missed something, obviously, but now I have
the key.
Right. Now I have this whole section that I have to run through again and just look for the thing that I missed.
See, when I did that, I remember the enemies then, like, the first time through there weren't enemies, but then you jump down, get the key, and the second time through, now there's enemies.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple instances of that where it would let you mm-hmm. go through it once. Oh, so for example, the guy who's holding the lever that keeps the bridge drawn, I had not gone after the Zeus's bolt, so I needed to backtrack, and when I backtracked, there were additional enemies that sort of almost helped lead me to where I was supposed to be going at that point. So I actually kind of liked that. I thought they mm-hmm. had handled that pretty well, while also giving that feel of this is not an open world, but it's a real enough world where you can explore.
Right.
I mean, I didn't really mean the part with the key. It was actually earlier when you're running around, was it outside Athens, I think was the first case where you're running around a lot, and there's like, what I didn't realize was that you needed to smash a wall to be able to jump from the balcony across.
Oh,
but
yeah.
When I played it the first time, I was like, I'm following this path, and I'm following this path, and I ended up back where I started without anything new. And because in that case, I did not realize that it was the A, that was the secret path that I was following, and B, I needed to do something else first. So, for the most part, good level design, but a few cases where it was, they were trying to do something clever, and it was just a little frustrating because it was unclear what my goal was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about you, Lorenzo?
Yeah, kind of piggybacking off of what David's saying, I kind of felt a little bit lost in a few areas, and the biggest determinant that kind of hit me were a lot of those instant death pits that I ended up running into when I was looking for secrets, to the point where I always like to praise the fact that this game had a very organic kind of life level design. Like we mentioned a few times, we revisit some of the areas with your new abilities. You enjoyed that sort of feeling of coming back to a new area stronger or better, or having the key to get through the door and keep going to the next area. When I play a game like Crash Bandicoot, and there's a lot of secrets and off the beaten path of the linear level design, I know that I'm kind of putting myself in danger when I try to explore a certain area. But at the same time, they also, those older games, kind of structure it to the point where they recognize, oh, you really are off the beaten path. Here's a new indication or a new change of music or something to let you know that you're going somewhere for a secret. And with God of War, after you clear the enemies and you're kind of given this little bit of a hub world kind of feel of one or two different places you can go that'll lead you to the next story element, there's still a few little nooks and crannies that you can travel to using some of the climbing abilities and some of the tricky jumps off of manipulating some of those blocks. And they still lead you to certain death traps if you're not careful. And you have to replay some of the moments again to get back to the checkpoint. So it isn't like a huge thing that I was like throwing my controller or raging about. I just felt like if the game wants to reward you for finding those Gorgon eyes, for finding those Phoenix feathers, and getting those little nook and cranny things that they put the things in, I kind of wanted something a little clearer to know where the danger begins and ends. Then again, it's Greek mythology. There's danger everywhere. It's freaking minotaurs and cyclops and things trying to rip off Kratos in half. So it just kind of made me having a mixed bag of every time that, as a video gamer, I like every time the game tells me to go right, something instinctively tells me go left. There's something on the left then. And with God of War having like, okay, this is the door that you need to go to, and everything's pointing that you have your new skill, activate the door. I'm still like saying there's got to be other stuff around here. There's a reason why it's highlighting the door so much. I gotta walk around, walk around. Oh, I just fell and died. And even though I thought it was an invisible wall, nope. Now I have to beat these guys open again, and it's just kind of made me a little frustrated here and there.
Yeah, some games have like if it's a pit that's gonna kill you, it has a little sign with a skull and crossbones on it or something like that, or little skulls coming out of the pit. That's always like, hey, no, seriously, this is not a secret area. Just don't kill yourself.
I definitely agree that like JRPGs are one of my favorite genres, and they are notorious for a dungeon where if the boss is to the right, then there's treasure to the left, and if you don't get that treasure now, you're never going to. I know in this game, there's a little moment where it says, "Hey, if you leave the tower for of Pandora or whatever, that you can't go back." And there are some really good secrets in that whole chamber area, like the muse. If you can find the two muse to unlock that secret chamber, like that, I thought was fantastic design. And they give you that moment of, hey, make sure you take care of that before you move on. So I really appreciated stuff like that, but I definitely agree that your instincts from other games of, oh, I'm supposed to go right, I'm going to go left, don't really work here a lot.
And it's a little bit of conflicting information when you did get that moment where it's like there's no turning back, and it just kind of questions and starts itching at your OCD slash completionist aspects of I think I got everything. Did I get everything? I better go check and check everything right now. So.
It also makes you feel like you're about to get to the last bit, but that's almost like the halfway point of the game. There's quite a lot of content after that, so kudos on
Yeah,
them
one
for that as well, I
yeah,
think.
one thing that kind of surprised me by the time I finished it was I mean, not to brag or anything, but I feel like I'm pretty good at sniffing out those secrets in games, but I usually miss a couple, and I was sure that I had missed like just a couple of things because some of them were really hard to find, and I'm like, all right, I barely managed to find this. I probably ran past a few other hidden things, but by the end of the game, I had every Gorgoneye and every whatever it was, feather,
Oh, well
and
done.
Nice.
so whatever level of skill they were expecting, I just made it.
I ended up cheating. This is the first playthrough where I decided to look up that infinite red orb glitch just so that I could get all of the weapons and spells maxed out so that I could get that trophy.
Oh, where you lure that harpy over or something?
So actually, I'll tell you, I did also manage to max everything out, and I'll tell you when I finally maxed out the last thing I needed, which was the Medusa head, which was during the fight against a million Kratoses, was
Oh, really?
when I hit it and maxed everything out. So that felt good too, and I was like, either I
Well
got
done.
really lucky or they timed this out really, really well.
No, overall, I remember every other playthrough I would have only like the one upgrade left, but I just wouldn't be able to get the orbs for it at that point. But it even when we were listing our dislikes, it didn't really sound like we disliked a whole lot of this game.
Yeah, we ended up talking about the other stuff that we liked.
The pros definitely outweigh the cons of the overall
Oh,
experience, in my opinion.
definitely. Any noteworthy moments, like Lorenzo, what was your like most noteworthy moment of this game?
I'll be honest, I'm a sucker for those moments where they change the mechanics for a little bit or do something a little unexpected. Things like the death of Eris in Final Fantasy VII, or even alluding to what happens in God of War 2 when his soldier kind of is in the, you fight a secret boss and you end up finding out that it was his soldier friend, and boom, he gets thrown into another boss on his way to the Sister of Fates, and every button like showed him like refusing to attack, like, oh. I don't really expect a whole lot of how should I say, I don't expect a whole lot of trickery or a whole lot of bait and switch kind of things in my games, but when Ares threw that spire from all the way when he was in Athens, when Kratos found the Pandora's box, that's when I knew that things just got real, because you fight all these guys and when you die, you die. But in the cinematic, I'm thinking, oh, Ares knew, and Ares got great aim, and oh, is that really going all the way across? Oh, right into Kratos and to impale him. I winced at the size, the strength, and everything that it took to do that, because when you have a world like this that's so brutal, that's so unforgiving with its characters that do or don't live for the different mythological creatures, that then your main character finds the big magic MacGuffin, I'm thinking, okay, now's the time to use it. Oh, nope. He's just got impaled. How's he going to get out of this kind of thing? Didn't really trigger. It was more of a, oh, is it over? Is this it? He can't come back from that. That was the big moment for me that I think was cinematically well done with the camera angles they chose to do, and just lured into more part of the gameplay when he went into the underworld. That was definitely the big moment for me that I knew that this was all the way through. There were a lot of special moments. That was the special almost to the end moment of the game that I knew that this game wasn't going to sit on its laurels. It was going to try to keep you guessing about how it's going to play out, the ending.
Yeah, it also
kind of... How about you,
David? On that point in particular, it did a great job of... Like, the whole game was kind of this, you know, mortal trying to fight the gods, and then it's like, oh, you think you're doing so great. Well, you know, Ares could have just killed you anytime he wanted to. He just didn't want to until this moment.
Exactly. That's the big thing that hit home to me. You're messing with the God of War. You best not miss if you're trying to overthrow him. And just Kratos just let his guard down a little bit trying to get that box, and Ares is like, nope.
They do point out a little bit earlier than that there's the harpies that are constantly watching over for Ares. So it makes sense that he would know that moment when Kratos did the impossible and found Pandora's box. But yes, definitely a fantastic twist to then send him to Hades, and then to tie that in as a quick and easy way to get him back to Athens, and that they almost alluded to it at the very beginning. Like, you can go over to that grave digger and talk to him, and it's like, what's this random NPC doing? And you can talk to him, so he must be an important character. Well, I'm sure that'll come up later, and it does.
Right.
So.
That was a really good, I liked how they implemented the Gravedigger on that moment. I was like, oh, hey, I remember you. Oh, this is the role you play. Okay, I can dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I was going to say, I knew that moment was coming because I had seen someone else play it before, but when I got the box and I was dragging it, and so I knew it was coming, but I was thinking if I didn't know what was coming next, I probably would be worrying about how long I'm going to have to drag this box to get it back to Athens.
Yeah.
Okay. But as for my own moment, I mentioned this on Facebook before. The biggest thing that stuck out to me was the boobs. It's more of a pun than an actual statement, but...
I... I always remember that first time the Oracle shows up in the vision, and she's got a see-through
yes.
top, and it's just like, why in the world are you even wearing that? And then what does Kratos do? Like, he reaches out at
yes.
where her breast would be. I'm just like, of course.
It's like, they were probably trying to convey the idea that he was confused by
yes,
this hologram
I know.
And trying to see if she's real. But what it looks like is this woman in a see-through top appears and starts telling him what to do, and his first instinct is to grab her boobs.
Mm-hmm.
I know. So I actually think that God of War starts on one of its highest notes. That Hydra battle was just perfect, in my opinion. Just on that, you're fighting a huge beast that just constantly regens itself, so it's got both a combat and puzzle mechanic to how you fight it, and then it's also a fantastic point of showing just who Kratos is when you go inside the beast's mouth after defeating it, and you find the ship captain, and you grab the key from him, and he's all like, oh, thank you, hero, thank you, and he's like, I didn't come here for you, and just throws him into the belly.
Yeah.
Like, that is so well done that that's how I define this game, is that first chapter right there, and it does just continue from that high note.
Yeah, and that was something I forgot to mention that I meant to in things that we like, is just the very opening cutscene of the game, just from a story standpoint, is so strong. Where you see Kratos saying the gods have abandoned him and jumping off the cliff and then going 2 weeks later. It's like, wait, what?
Or earlier,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Or earlier, I mean, yeah. It's like, what happened? Why is he jumping off the cliff? Also, what's going to happen after he jumps off the cliff? Well, I guess I'll find out.
When you play the game, yep. And that actually, that first level after that little cutscene and everything, I want to say, it had a little bigger impact for me with how they transitioned. We're in 2016, and people rag on No Man's Sky and a few other games, but I think the technology has improved to the point where we can literally be walking across a planet, jump into a spaceship, fly to a moon, get off, walk around that moon without any sort of loading screen or any sort of transitional big interrupting thing that kind of reminds you, hey, you're playing a video game. That's, I think, the cool thing about being here a gamer in 2016. But back then, 2005, you get introduced to this bombastic intro. Da-da-da-da, it's the select theme. You got to pick one of your one of the options, whether you want to just do a traditional check if the sounds and stuff are good. I am playing a video game after all. But once you click new game, that face of the silhouette just stops and looks
yeah.
up. The gods have abandoned me. It starts going out, and then boom, yeah. cinematic. Now there is no hope. And you see him you see it all play out. You're thinking, did I just start a game, or did I just start an epic that didn't even have time to adhere to common menu loading screen kind of introduction kind of format? It blew that out of the way, and it kept that momentum going into that first level with the Hydra at the ship, where the easiest thing I can relate it to is referencing Aaron Hansen, the Ego Raptor's sequelitis on Mega Man X, when when you talk about like certain game mechanics and game things. And I know it's a podcast, I'm not going to actually swear, but when he just did all the comparison of like, oh, this, you know, the physics is pretty smart and electrical engineering is pretty smart. The intro stage to God of War is so genius because it really does not only teach you the mechanics and the things in a mm-hmm. pretty simple, here's the button to do it, but I'm not going to pause unless it's absolutely necessary. Just do it. Hit it. These guys are attacking you now. I'm not going to stop the action to let you know you have to defend yourself. You just have to do it. This is God of War. And then it gets you to these boss battles and things, and it just encompasses both the gameplay, the mechanics of climbing, running around, and the scope that you're not just going to be fighting like little small dudes. There's going to be a Hydra, there's going to be a big dude, and then there's even a bigger Hydra head behind it all. It just gave you like the whole sort of experience in less than 10, 15 minutes of gameplay, all in a package that, if they just cut that into the demo, which I think they did before, when they were doing promotional things, if they cut just that first level into the demo, that would have increased interest and
Oh yeah.
sales easy.
I could totally see that being the demo used to sell this game. And so yeah, that's God of War. Anything else you guys want to bring up as we wrap this
Oh,
podcast up?
yeah, a couple stories I just want to tell just of me being an idiot pretty much in the game was
Sure.
two places where I tried or almost tried completely the wrong solution. In the Oracle puzzle where you have to, when you first see her
Oh
hanging and you have
yeah.
to figure out how to get up there, and there are two blocks that you have to move around. So,
I think I did the same thing you're going to describe.
okay, that makes me feel a little better then. You realize that there's this gazebo that you clearly have to get on top of to get over to where she is, and a cliff that had to, you could jump off of heading in that direction, and these two big pillars. So I thought, okay, you have to move the pillars to make a path to get to the gazebo. And I spent a long time lining them up, and then the camera angle wouldn't work because when you jumped off, it would shift completely, and you couldn't really see
Yep.
them from where you started. And I just spent a long time wondering if this is even what I'm supposed to do. And I finally got them lined up to the point where, I was doing a blind jump and then moving them to where I landed, until finally I could do two blind jumps and then jump onto the gazebo, and I realized, okay, I can't get from here to the wall I need to climb on. And so I looked around and said, okay, well, what else can I do? Oh, there's a chest behind this gazebo. Oh, the platform the chest is on. I could have just jumped up here and then jumped up onto the roof. And the pillars were for the next part.
Yeah, that's one of the first puzzles where I actually had to stop and think about it for a second because I started doing the exact same thing as you, but then it does that camera shift. And I mean, this is one of those like genius moments, I would say, of the game and how they really like had confidence in having you sit down and think about the puzzles is that the actual solution is to drop the pillar on top of the other pillar and put it between that gazebo and where you need to get to. And it's fairly obvious that yeah, you can just pull the pillars over there and drop them, but that connection of oh, I need to drop it on top of the other one because like that doesn't instantly come to you. Because up to that point, and it never happens later in the game, but up to that point, you're always ever dealing with pulling and pushing one thing. But this time it's saying, hey, to progress, you need to think about it for a second. And I just, yeah, that is the first puzzle I can think of that really shines on the whole, like, being difficult and not, like, you have to figure it out eventually. Otherwise, that's where you stop.
Right. The other one, which it sounds like you had a similar moment, which was really funny to me when you said it before. In Hades's maze, where you have to kill every enemy in the maze before it will let you out. I ran around and I thought I killed everything, but I got to the door and it told me I needed to kill more. So I went out and found a path that I
Oh,
missed,
yeah.
killed more enemies, and it still wouldn't open. And I ran around the whole thing, and the door that says you have to kill everything in the maze
Has a
is sitting up.
counter.
Yeah, well, it has a counter, so you could see, like, oh, there's a little bit. Well, it's like a meter that needs to fill up. So I thought,
Yeah.
okay, it's sitting above a big pillar that's pounding against the wall. And I thought, there has to be a reason that this is right by the door. Maybe I'm the only thing left living in this maze. Maybe I need to kill myself by jumping in front of the pillar. So I jumped down in front of it, and the thing was, I knew that there was a little doorway, but I had tried to get there before, and I said, okay, the pillar doesn't go far enough back to actually get in there, so maybe it's, you know, there's nothing there. So I thought, okay, I'll just try jumping in front of the pillar and letting it crush me, and I jumped down, and when it pulls back, and I see enemies standing in that doorway.
Yeah.
And so then I jumped out of the way and had to figure out how to get there. But that was, I was definitely willing to try it in that moment before I saw saw
that. That is awesome.
I didn't even see them completely. I just saw an arm sticking out and went, wait a minute.
Yeah, that pillar has a bit of a timing to it, like a different pattern that it plays. And I think it also is affected by where you are. But yeah, that was a good one.
It was like every third cycle, it pulled back all the way, and that was why I didn't see it before.
I could totally see David's mindset of having it reach down to that one and thinking, oh, the pillar has abandoned me. Now there is no hope. Well, the only other...
So that's all I've got.
Right, and the only other thing I wanted to add to here, which hopefully doesn't totally break the mold.
At last you are here. I have killed the Hydra myself, ripped the head off Medusa's shoulder, even killed a god of Olympus, but I have never seen such skill and strength as yours. You have conquered god mode.
I just wanted to play that little bit. I just made a phone call in the middle of this podcast because there was a secret Easter egg that happens after you defeat God mode, and it's a little telephone number. You call it, and it's a little bit longer than that. I would say it's about a 2 minute, 30 second conversation that Kratos, the voice actor, Terrence C. Carson, has with you, the player who just beat God mode, letting you know of like just something that I wasn't really ready to understand all the way back in 2005, that you could have a game and then you can like set up and pay for like a 1-800 number to just be a little silly, be a little whatever about it, but if you do something like that, I always think that there's some sort of like corporate reason of doing it, something where you would want to you'd want to just be a little silly or be a little out of character for a moment to kind of address your fans and remind you that you're still playing a video game. You even see that with Killer Instinct sometimes, where they kind of put themselves into a lot of other of their Rareware games like Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong Country 2. You see like an arcade of Killer Instinct in the background, and it's not like, oh hey, I remember that game. It's that's pretty much it. Whereas like certain franchises and things want you to remember them for what they were in the moment, and when you find this secret code, there's no like little party, there's not David Jaffe or any other people saying, hey, thanks for playing the game, it was fun. No, it's literally Kratos talking to you in character that's telling you that you are amazing. I've never seen a mortal do this well. And this is back in 2005. This is 2016. This is September 2016. And you could still call that number and you could listen to Kratos' 2.5 minute conversation about how he had his revenge and how you are such a great player in character. And that was just the kind of thing that, well, I'm still slow to like newer trends in gaming, and Pokemon Go obviously lit the world on fire with its ARG kind of mechanics and such. All that really just built up to a game that even after you've put the disc away, after you've unplugged the controller, after you've even moved on to the newer systems where they have to re-release it as a collection, there's still something tangential about the game that lives on. And not to be too sad and mopey, but it's something that I've only really experienced when my grandfather passed away and my grandmother left his voicemail when you call the home number and you can hear his voice. So it was just, you know, not to be super mopey. I love my grandpa, and I'm the kind of guy that, you know, you go through life with a smile rather than like dwelling and being all sad and such. So whenever it's like, oh, I want to hear from grandpa, I call and I get to talk to grandma. Oh, okay, cool, good to talk to you, touch base, love you, hey, can you not pick up next time, I want to hear grandpa. And then boom, it's there. We as gamers can do something like that in 2016, where Kratos is going to change voice actor in the next God of War. It's going to change where he's going to fight against the Norse gods and do all the sort of things. But if we want to, we can call a 1-800 number, go back to 2005, where Terrence C. Carson continues to act as the first Kratos voice actor and lets you know how great of a player you were. And that was something that stood out to me I didn't finish God mode when I did the playthrough for this, but it was just one of the things that I remember. Oh yeah, they did do something like that. I wonder if that still works. Oh my goodness, it still works. Amazing.
Yeah, that's the part that amazes me, is I can't believe that it still works more than 10 years later. That's crazy.
That's amazing.
That just shows the kind of impact that this game, this series had. There's certain games that want to start off on such a big, grandiose scale and promise that it's going to be a big, huge franchise for the generations to remember. Cough, cough, Mighty Number 9, cough, cough. But with God of War, they knew they had something special from day one. They had the passion, the company, the producers, the developers, the artists, and everything. When you see all the unlocked footage and things of their interviews, you see that they weren't just guys going in, getting a paycheck, and coming out, which is how a lot of the common video game AAA industry kind of seems when you look at the recycled or yearly installments of Madden, Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty. I don't want to go on a big anti-gaming rant or something, or try to be all elitist about it, because there's still merit in a lot of those things. It's just that the thing that God of War stands up about, one of the big things that makes it so replayable today, is that you get a sense from playing it that there's a lot of passion behind the decisions that they made, and it all felt very unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where I got the feeling that I was saying before. Like, I thought, oh, this game is selling itself on, you know, on blood and sex, but it's actually made by a bunch of people that knew what they were doing and did a really great job of it in so many aspects besides that.
Yeah, they really did. It's amazing. There are not a lot of games that hold up this well 10 years later. So that, and still being a fantastic game, like not even just, oh, it's good for its time. No, it's like, if you were to play this game today, it would still be fantastic. So,
yeah, that was, in a lot of ways, that was like better level design, better combat design than a lot of games I've played recently.
Mm-hmm. So with that, let's wrap this up. Remind everyone that the game for the end of October is October 29th. We plan to record for The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. Come hell or high water, even if we don't finish the game, we will be recording that day. So yes. That we can like at least mark it off the list. There's now a Facebook page for AD Game Club, which you can keep up with any updates that might come out between now and then. We're on iTunes, so please rate and review and share with your friends. It's been a lot of fun doing. Thank you, David, and thank you, Lorenzo, for joining me on this. Okay, and we're out.